The Jesus story you didn't know existed. That's because we're just looking at it right now. Also, we'll be talking about the national churches, Jerusalem, what's going on over there. We're ready to begin. Next step number 775, May 25th, 2023, and we start right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to a 15th season of the Next Step podcast with Father Vazgen. With these podcasts, Father Vazgen provides a very distinct and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course, the neophyte. So we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Is there an angle or a view from which you haven't viewed something? Obviously, there's so many different views. You know, you look at somebody speaking, or imagine going to a concert and somebody is performing. Where you're sitting is one view and somebody else has another view. Somebody else has still another view. In fact, just recently I was looking at some tickets for a concert and they had actually seats that were behind the stage that you couldn't see the performance. Obviously, they were a lot cheaper, but so you would be paying not to see the performance. It basically might as well get some nice headsets for the amount that you're paying for the tickets, right? You're just going to be listening. So different angles. Today, I've got a different angle for you, okay? You've heard me say, walk in the shoes of others. Obviously, yeah, that's our In His Shoes platform. Walking in the shoes of others, it's the ultimate expression of empathy, right? To feel what the other person's pain is. In Armenian, tsavadanim, let me understand what your pain is. Empathy. An expression of love, an expression of sacrifice. I'm going to come out of my comfort zone to feel your pain. And we always talk about other people feeling our pain. And we try to feel the other's pain. You know, obviously, we do homeless feeds. We go out there and we're in different areas, working with the indigent population, working with people who have survived huge traumas, working with people who are going through traumatic experiences right now. Why? To feel their pain, to understand what it's like to walk in their shoes. But have you ever thought that we've left somebody out of this equation? Have you ever wondered what it's like to walk in the shoes of Christ? Well, that's easy. Yeah, I walk on the water. Yeah, I can imagine that. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about just standing there and doing some miracles and everything. I'm talking about the human emotions that fill us all when we leave somebody, when we leave people. Specifically, a few days ago was the Ascension Feast, and Jesus ascended into heaven. This coming Sunday is the Pentecost, and the Pentecost is the reception of the Holy Spirit, and the Christian church is born. And for the last, you know, ever since September, we've been doing daily meditations and messages, which you can find on epostle.net. And I've been going through some unusual messages this last week, and specifically in regard to the Ascension. And it dawned on me only because it coincided. The Ascension was coincided with the wedding of my son. And it gave me a moment to think about what it's like to be in the shoes of Christ. Well, let me be more specific. What was it like when he left his children? Yeah, we always talk about, look, okay, Jesus is up on the mountain, right? And he had he got up on that mountain and he says, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. And just as the Father sent me, now I'm sending you. Go therefore, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them what I've commanded you, what I've shared with you, and remember that I am with you to the end of the ages. It's the Great Commission. It's the Great Commission, and we've heard it celebrated, not just read in church, but literally celebrated. It is so powerful, in fact. The ending in particular, when you think that this is the way the Gospel of St. Matthew ends, it's with the words of Jesus. The Alpha and the Omega, he's the beginning and the end. There it is. And the end is, I am with you till the end of the ages, till the end of eternity. You don't have to wait for ages. In other words, I'm always with you. That's how it ends. And Jesus then ascends into heaven. And we always look at that entire story and we feel very comforted. Oh yeah, this is very nice. Jesus is always with us. Now, turn it around. Have you ever thought what it must have felt like for Jesus? What was it like to give up his life, the comfort that he had? Many, many years ago, a guy named Nicholas Kazantzakis wrote a book called The Last Temptation of Christ. Ooh, did that cause controversy? Controversy because it played with the human nature of Christ. Today in this world, we're a little bit more open and able to talk. And, you know, Kazantzakis, I think that was in the 1950s, so maybe 70 years ago, possibly in the 60s when he wrote that. And eventually they made a movie in the 1980s. It led to Christian boycotts of theaters and stuff like that. Why? Because we dared to imagine Jesus's humanity, let's say it that way. Yes, he was all God and he was all man, perfect. That's what we believe. Complete God, complete man at all times, never separated. So in this story by Kazantzakis, It's a book of fiction, yes, let me make that clear. But he goes on to wonder, what was it like for Jesus? He gave up a lot. Have you ever thought that, you know, he could have kicked back? Maybe gotten married, had a family. Still had a good time with his friends, you know, Peter stopping by, saying, hey, you remember when we walked on the water together? Hey, do you remember how we fed the 5,000 together, you know? Like, in other words, can we imagine Jesus in an old age who has a time to reminisce and think about these things? Anyway, the storyline as it goes is the last temptation of Christ is up at the cross. In other words, Jesus goes through the temptations here on earth. But the last temptation is Satan himself who tempts him on the cross and says, hey, look, forget about this. Forget about all this talk that you have. Forget about spilling your blood. Come on, let's go off the cross. And he takes him off the cross and he walks with him. And he says, look, this is what your life could have been or can be if you just come off the cross. And you have the capability of doing that, right? Yeah, this is what the story is, The Last Temptation of Christ. And I highly recommend you read the book. The movie was okay, but the book is really, really good. I read it in college. It was one of those books that really touched me because it gave me the right to think about these things. It's okay to think about these things. It's not bad to think about it because in thinking about them, in meditating about these things, you yourself understand what a sacrifice Jesus had made. And so Jesus in his humanity, he is tempted. But the final thing is he goes up on the cross and that's how, I won't tell you how the book ends, but let me tell you, you'll be happy. the way the book ends is he goes back on the cross and he realizes, yeah, he can have a very safe and nice life, but it's up there. He was sent for a purpose, a mission, and it's up on that cross. And so as I was contemplating this, what was the feeling that Jesus was going through? It occurred to me that I was going through similar feelings in my head. I don't know what Jesus went through, but I'll tell you, I have a good idea what he was feeling. Because here he is, he spent this last 3 years with these people. He got very, very close to them. He had the inner 12. One of them ended up betraying him. The other denied him. Actually, all of them denied him, except possibly, arguably, you could say John, who was at the foot of the cross. He had a company of a greater group of people, the company of 72, is it? Yeah, 72 of the larger group. And there is Mary Magdalene and the characters that we've heard of, the mother of Christ. You know, we often forget that, yeah, she was the first person to follow him. Yeah, she was the first one. I don't want to say the first Christian. Actually, she was the first Christian. But, you know, that gets into the whole religious thing. When did Christianity start? Everybody, just relax, take a chill pill and listen to what we're talking about, okay? Yeah, believe it or not, I've got those people too. They're just waiting. You know, they're waiting for something wrong to be said, you know. And then, oh, what do you mean? You're talking about first Christians. First time they were identified as Christians was in Mesopotamia, Egypt. No, it was in Antioch. Yes, I know it and you know it. And just relax, okay? That's not what we're talking about. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about St. Mary being part of that group. Part of the following of Jesus. You've got to remember, these 3 years were so impactful. And arguably, even that 3 years it can be brought down to 1 year. The Gospel of John, I believe, is just 1 year of Jesus' life. So we've got Jesus sharing his life with us, but at the same time, these his children. This group of people that are with him, whether it's the 12, the 72, the inner core, whoever it might be, these were very, very close and devoted, some allies, and some of them friends and closer than relatives. When they say your mother and your brothers are out here, his relatives are out there, what does Jesus say? My relatives are those people who hear the word of God and do it. And he, you know, you've got to take it for what he says. This is Jesus Christ talking. These are my closest. And yet, on a human level, there has to be this attachment that you have to people. Now, obviously, on the divine level, he's standing back and he's looking at the whole thing and he's saying, well, I'm with them for the end of the ages. These are my children. But what does it mean when he's leaving, what does it mean for the rest of the group? And this is what I'm saying, it really clicked with me when my son, my third son, got married. Yes, we're empty nesters now. They're all out of the house, yes. So he got married this last weekend, and it really hit me. You leave your children, and they go off. And you worry. You're a parent. What will happen to them? Are they okay? Did you spend enough time with them? Did you give them the things that they needed to? Oh man, this one was a really hard one for me. I kept listening to John Lennon's Darling Boy. You know, and there's that one little phrase in there. Life is something that happens to you while you're busy making plans, other plans. You know, oh yeah, we're thinking about so many things that all of a sudden life is going by. And you struggle with that. Did I do the right things? Was everything okay? But at some point you realize you have to let go. It's just like the bird in the nest, right? Has to let go of the young one. Like it or not, you know, if you don't, that young one is just going to sit there in that nest and will eventually be suffocated by you sitting on that bird. Think about it. Think about the metaphor there. But what does a bird do? Pushes it out of the nest so that it can at least try to see if it picks up the wind and tries to fly. Yeah. And that's what parents need to do. At some point, you need to say, I've given everything that I can, and at this point, I need to let them go, be on their own. And that's what marriage is. It's letting them go. Letting them go and getting them to figure it out for themselves, to continue the species, to bring children in the world and struggle with the difficulties of raising children. Not as a curse, but as something beautiful, something to be celebrated because you sweat over that. You have difficulties over that, and that difficulty is something that you can overcome as well. So it is a really, really beautiful thing when you think about it. What Jesus did when he ascended, he said, it's time. He said, it's time for you to do it. Now, yes, you may get messed up. You may be in the nest and I'm kicking you out and you may fall down and break your back because your wings won't pick up the wind. That's a possibility. But I don't think so. Because why? I'm with you. I'm with you for the end of the ages. Not that I'm going to be picking you up off of the ground, but I'm there to teach you, to give you a reminder of what it's all about, that you need to sail. I've taught you everything that I have to offer. I've told you that if you have one, make it into two. If you've got five, make it into five. If you've got 10, make it into another 10. I've told you to live your life, share it with others. I've told you that it's better to give than it is to receive. So I've given you all of this content now. And at some point now, you need to do it. And this is really a big thing in religion, by the way, at least one for me, is getting people to understand that this is not a lifelong challenge of sitting there and learning. But even Jesus at some point said, okay, it's your turn now. Get out there and do it. And I swear this is what happened to me this past week. I'm writing stories about the Ascension, getting ready for the Pentecost. We're producing all of this content, and it just hit me. This is exactly what I'm going through as a father. You've given everything you can to your children. And at some point, you need to say, okay, now it's your turn. Now you're going to go out there, and there are some rough patches, but I'm with you. I'm with you. I've been sharing with you everything that I know, good and bad. I'm not perfect, but I've given you examples from my life. And the things that have been wrong where I'm not perfect, you have an opportunity. I respect that you have the ability to check out and see that I haven't been perfect and correct them and make them different in your life. And it is just a beautiful symbiosis that takes place. It's a symbiotic relationship that we have, one playing off of the other. And I think this is what Jesus felt. I would be so bold to say it, but I do believe it. I believe that Jesus was at that point where he said, okay, I've given you everything. It's time for me to return to the Father. But I'm not going to leave you alone. I've given you everything that I know. The Holy Spirit is with you. The Spirit is inside of you. But now it's your turn. It's your turn to get out there. It's your turn to do what you need to do. I always feel bad for celebrity children. Have you ever heard like stories about celebrity children? They're the children of so-and-so. The children or the son of this actor. The daughter of this high-powered executive. And that's how they're referred to. Never by themselves. it's even a greater challenge for them, isn't it, right? It's even a greater challenge because they have to rise to the occasion at that point and say that, wait a minute, I am somebody. So we walked our son and new daughter down the aisle. We watched them get married, united. We said the prayers over their head. It was just very beautiful. The Archbishop shared his intimate reflections because he's known Christopher since day one. And he shared his reflections, and so did everyone else. One particular person was there that just made me, it made my eyes fill up. It was a teacher that I'm so glad that my son has been in touch with him since the seventh grade. A teacher who went one step further and gave my son an opportunity to express himself in a very unique way. That expression, which until today has set off his trajectory in the way he's going. So I can't tell you how excited I am and how happy I am. But for our purposes here, I wanted to just share that with you. I think that ultimately, it's that loving and caring parent that Christ is to us. We always think of the Father as the parent, right? But Christ. The Father and I are one, as Christ, as the manifested God in our midst. And he's saying, okay, now it's your turn. I've given you everything that I need to give. And you know what? It goes back to that. Remember, I shared this with you, I think last year or year before. Somebody had asked me, who would you have dinner with, dead or alive? And when they ask a priest, they always think like the priest goes, oh, with Jesus. Or you ask the rabbi, they're going to say, with Moses or something. You know, like, I said, yeah, you know, I wouldn't want to have dinner with Jesus. He's already taught us everything that we know. I would rather have dinner with my dad that I haven't seen for the last 30 years, to be able to sit with him, to be able to talk with him and say, Dad, how did you do it? How did you take care of all of this stuff? That's wild. Because Jesus has already given us everything that we need. It's there. It's there. It's just for us to open our eyes. And at the ascension, that's what Jesus does. He says, I am with you to the end of the ages. And I want you to think about this. When he said that, do you believe it? I believe it. Now here's the shocker. I believe Jesus believes it too. He is with us to the close of the ages. Let's take a break right now. We play a song of the day. Yesterday, the living legend, is now dead legend, I guess, Tina Turner passed away. Oh, she was remarkable. 83 years old. She succumbed to an illness, but she left so much, so many treasures in this world. Now. Relax. I know you think I'm going to play Private Dancer or What's Love Got to Do with It. No, we'll pick something else out. More appropriate for us. Here is the late and great Tina Turner.
When I find myself in times of trouble, evil thoughts, they come to me, taking away my wisdom, but I let it be. When prejudiced people finally agree, open their eyes and they will see, it's gotta be an answer. Dark and it's hard to see. Trouble seemed to want to follow me, but I remember my words of wisdom. Let it be. Although it's hard, there's still a chance that they all will see that we can live together. way to learn to love is to understand. I'm giving my all, I'm doing what I can, using my thoughts of wisdom, let it be. And if I find it hard, I'll kneel and pray, hoping things will change someday. Use our minds of wisdom to let it be.
Tina Turner, when she was with Ike Turner, where she got her name, she got her start, in a tragic life too at the beginning, but she just turned it around. She was really an incredible woman, Tina Turner, unmistakable voice, a unique voice, which we're finding out she didn't really care for. She had a beautiful book out, I think it was 2018, it was called My Love Story. Highly recommend it. It's a story about overcoming some of the adversity in her life. Anyway, this was Let It Be, of course, by the Beatles, with some very interesting lyrical changes, right? Don't you think so? When I find myself in times of trouble, evil thoughts, they come to me, taking away my wisdom. That's pretty impressive. I like that. Anyway, we'd play a song of the day every week. It's just one of those things to just give us a little bit of time to digest what's been said. Today we also digest the fact that we are less an incredible talent like Tina Turner. I'll have a link on today's show notes not only to this song, but more importantly to Tina Turner. Learn a little bit about her. Get to know her if you don't know much about her. One of these unique personalities that comes along, more than just an entertainer. Somebody who really, if you look deep, you understand how to overcome some of the obstacles in life, the power of hope in your life. And I'll leave it at that, just with a wish that God rest her soul. And may her music continue to inspire us, and may her story continue to motivate us. Today, during the second portion, I want to talk a little bit about the ethnic churches. We're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in Jerusalem and the idea that somehow, as ethnic churches, we have this misunderstanding of how we play into the whole church story. Let's back up a little bit. So today begins with Pope Francis coming to terms with the Coptic Orthodox Church and accepting a group of Coptic Orthodox martyrs as saints of the Roman Catholic Church. And this is beautiful, and you see that there's an interplay between the Roman Church and, of course, the Coptic Orthodox. You have an ethnic church. Now, when I talk about ethnic church, we have quite a few of those. It could be the Greek Orthodox, the Russian Orthodox, Serbian, the Romanian, Bulgarian, including the Armenian Orthodox, right? The Georgians, you know, these are called ethnic churches in that, well, it's not just limited to those of that ethnic, that ethnic brand, but if you really want to get the full taste of it, you have to sort of be that. I mean, like, you don't have to be Armenian to come into an Armenian church. But the reality is, if you don't really get what's going on in there, there are a few. There are some that are ABCs, Armenian by choice, and they get in there, and they love it. And I've met several of them. They love them. But that several of them is not a big group. Okay, let's be honest. It's a few. It's a handful that you've got throughout the world. The reality is that, you know, these ethnic churches really do a special service to those ethnic groups. Now, the Greek Orthodox Church, interestingly enough, has stepped over that boundary, And you can go into Greek Orthodox Church and see many non-Greeks who are part of the congregation. And there's an entire story about how that takes place. Back in the 1970s, 1980s, up to the 1990s, the Antiochian Orthodox Church, big movement. And I was part of that. I was part of that because I was stationed in Cupertino, California, and we were just basically a stone's throw away from Ben Lomond, California, where the Antiochian Orthodox community was there at St. Peter's and Paul. And it was just, it was one of the most beautiful sights you can see. It's a church that had a community that lived the faith. And what do I mean by that? Well, first of all, it was called Antiochian, but the only thing about it was Antiochian was the name. It was, everything was done in English, the hymns, the administration, and their bishop, of course, was the Antiochian bishop. But everybody understood everything. And it was basically, for all intents and purposes, it was an Orthodox church here in America. And, you know, in fact, I remember Father John Braun. We were so close that I invited him to the Theophany service in the Armenian church, and he gave the sermon. I think we must have that recorded someplace. Let me make a note of that and see if we could find that. That was an interesting day. From the Antiochian Orthodox Church, John Braun, Father John Braun, he was, I think at the time, was in San Diego, and we brought him up to Cupertino where he gave the sermon on that time. And we were very, very close. I mean, we were going back and forth between our churches. And the entire idea of ethnicity, ethnic church, was something that we saw as an obstacle to really manifesting the Orthodox tradition here in America specifically. A couple of years ago, Bishop Daniel Findikian wrote that beautiful book, which I've alluded to many, many times. We've used it as a text for one of our conferences recently, too, Building Up the Body of Christ. And he makes the point. And you know what? I'm going to make sure that today, on today's show notes, you have a link not only Building Up the Body of Christ, but also to an article that I had written back in the 1990s about the Antiochian Orthodox and what they are. So I don't want to take too much time of this next step. I'll give you more reading material on that, okay? But one of the big stumbling blocks for the ethnic churches is that ethnicity itself prevents you from seeing the orthodoxy of that church tradition. And it's something that we struggle with, too, in the Armenian church. Not too, yes, we struggle with it, too. What does that mean, that we are Armenian church? Does that mean that Armenian describes our church, our Christianity? Well, interestingly enough, this appeared this week on social media. Here is a black man introducing an idea that I think resonated with me, should resonate with you. Listen.
I am not a black Christian. You're not a black Christian or a white Christian or a conservative Christian or a liberal Christian. You're a Christian. If you know anything about grammar, when you put a word in front of Christian, it becomes the adjective. And the adjective informs the noun. So then the adjective is more important than the noun. So if I say I'm a black Christian, I'm telling my Christian part that my blackness comes first. That my ethnicity is more important than my allegiance to Christ. That my political affiliation is more important than my allegiance to Christ. No, I'm a Christian and I happen to be black, and I thank God for the skin that I'm in.
That is Daryl Black doing I'm a Christian. Obviously, yeah, you're a Christian, but did you hear what he had to say? And at the end, I thank God that I'm black. Okay, so he's like, he's got it down, right? He says, I'm a Christian, and I happen to be black. But that identifier is not going to identify what kind of Christian I am. And this is a difficult one, especially within the ethnic churches. And it's something that we've had to deal with. And especially as clergymen are being educated in the West, it becomes a bigger issue. Because now we've got issues with what is our role? When you think about many of the Armenian churches, and this is true for all the ethnic churches, including the Greek, the Russian, and everything, these become centers for cultural activities as well. The churches become centers where Armenians identify themselves as Armenian through the church, vis-a-vis the church. And this you'll find more in the rural areas as opposed to, say, like where I'm at in the Los Angeles area. It's not that prevalent today. It was many, many years ago. Many years ago when I was growing up, there weren't too many places where you could express your Armenianness. It was in the church. But as more and more organizations came around, the schools populated. But you go to the rural areas right now. This Saturday, I'm going to be in an area called Yetem in Visalia. They're very much the church is the identity of the people. And what a nice group of people that you'll meet over there. You meet them, and they will identify themselves vis-a-vis the church, who they are as far as the Armenian Christian. That's it. So sometimes when we talk about these questions, this becomes a bigger issue than it needs to be. I remember a few years ago when I was speaking up in Vancouver. This is really one that I never understood. I was going to be the guest speaker for a genocide commemoration, and there was just people from all over. And so I was being interviewed by different people, by the newspaper, local newspaper, by local media, and an Armenian broadcaster gave me a call. I had just gotten into Vancouver, and she got on the phone and she said, oh, we're happy to have you here. We'd love to have you on the show. I said, okay, thank you. And she says, I have a question to ask you. Are you a Armenian Christian or are you a Christian Armenian? And, this was akin to like how many angels are sit on the top of a pin and the head of a pin. It's like, what? Like, what are we talking about now? You really care about this? But it was very important to her. And I forgot how I answered. I must have said I'm an Armenian Christian, or I must have said I was a Christian Armenian. I don't remember because she caught me off guard. So whatever answer I gave, I guess it was the wrong answer because they never called me back. So it was kind of interesting. I'm in Vancouver, this Armenian priest, we're talking about genocide, and all the media had interviewed me, but the Armenian press had said no. You know, they didn't want to get into it. Whatever answer I gave. But it's a big one. And this one, Daryl Black is his name. I'll put a link on today's show notes. You can probably hear it a little bit better than the recording that we have. And let me just apologize for that, too. I wasn't happy with the recording. But I think the original, you'll get a better feel for it. Anyway, back to our point. These ethnic churches, and they're all around, now have additional responsibilities because they're connected to countries. They're connected to countries. When I tell you about, like, when John Lennon asks us to imagine there are no countries, there's no religion, think about that for a moment, right? I mean, what is it that separates us? It's these ethnicities and what this man, Daryl Black, just said a few minutes ago, right? It's these ethnicities that take precedent over the reality that we are all children of God. That, you know, like if I'm Armenian Christian, that's an identifier of Christianity. Well, let me show you how it plays into reality with an incident that took place right under our noses. A couple weeks ago, priest of Jerusalem was defrocked for incidences that led to discoveries about mismanagement and selling. The details are not important for this discussion. He was defrocked. And as a result of that, we have these pundits, and we have many in the Armenian people, getting up in Armenian press and talking about, well, the church belongs to all of us. Listen to this. This is the point of what I wanted to say. They say the church belongs to all of us. It is an Armenian institution and therefore belongs to the Armenian people. Well, that sounds good, right? And so he says this guy had no business selling the properties of the Armenian people. That sounds good too. But let me ask you this. If on the deed it says it belongs to the Armenian people, who is the agent of process? They don't tell you that part. It just sounds good. And we hide under all of this rhetoric. This is like, remember a few weeks ago I told you that there's this yellow journalist and he's got this newspaper and he's out there and you hear him talking and he's talking about this belongs to the Armenian people. First of all, man, you've never even been into the church. You've never even gone into a church, right? And now all of a sudden you care that the Armenian church is suffering over there, okay? That's number one. Number two, yeah, it sounds good. It belongs to the Armenian people. Okay, now who is the agent of process? In other words, who do you go to when you need to talk to about that particular property? Well, there has to be something, and it's vested in the name of the Patriarchate of Jerusalem, and therefore the Jerusalem Patriarchate has its own regulations. Yes, it is worrisome. Yes, don't get me wrong. Yes, it is a big loss if these properties are given away. And there is a very good chance that these things are going to disappear because of the mismanagement. That's not my point here. Please, please don't write to me and don't ask me to don't tell me, don't defend one way or another. That's not the point of what I'm talking about right now. I'm talking about the ethnic churches, and one of the drawbacks is that you're connected with the ethnic country and people. And so in this case, if we want to play it out and Jerusalem belongs to the nation, well, who's the representative of the nation? Is it the government in Armenia? Well, believe it or not, there's people who don't accept that. And they are sitting in the diaspora. And so all of these different things that should be uniting us are drawing us further and further apart from one another. That's only within a small little ethnic group we call Armenian. Now imagine on the bigger, broader scale. Imagine bigger ethnic groups. Imagine groups against groups. And you've got the makeup of disagreement. You've got the makeup of what's one of the dysfunctionalities of our world today. Look what happened between Russia and Ukraine, right? They wanted to say that these properties belong to them. They want to say they belong to the others. We want freedom. And that's a really good one too, by the way. Freedom is one of those fun words to throw around. Everybody wants freedom. don't get yourself wrong. There's nobody who says, I want to be a tyrant and there will be no freedom. They never say that until they're into power, right? At the start, it all sounds good. It's the rhetoric. Yes, we are fighting for freedom. Okay, that's great. You're fighting for freedom. And at the end of the day, what do you got to show for it? Where is that freedom? Right now, we've got this ethnic situation going on in Artsakh. Artsakh is heavily populated. By that I mean like 90% Armenian, if not 95. And the Azeris are saying it's theirs. And they're playing games. Yes, what I was saying a minute ago about the Russians and the Ukrainians, right? These are political issues. These are political issues. When the whole thing began, I kind of like imagined myself. I mean, Russia was saying we don't like the Ukraine cozying up next to the West. And I thought to myself, geez, what would we do here in the United States if Mexico or Canada decided that they wanted to cozy up with the East, with China, say, or with Russia? What would we do? Would we just twiddle our thumbs and say, okay, it's a free country, you guys have your own autonomy, go ahead and do it? Or would we park the Seventh Fleet out in the Gulf of Mexico and just say, get back into your house? I mean, think about it for a moment. Walk in the shoes of somebody else. These are not just easy questions that get answered by, well, he was wrong for doing it. Or like what's happening right now. Well, we are not going to talk about it. Until they meet our demands, we're not going to sit at a bargaining table. Well, then you've lost. The only thing you can do then is just escalate a war. And we need to be brave enough to stand up and say something about it. Like, in other words, change it from the rhetoric and make it into an actual mission for us. You want to know what it's like to go to a wedding where I'm the father? The actual biological father of the kid. I'm sitting in the wedding, and my dear friend Chris, he approaches me and congratulates me. In his hand is a bag from Barnes & Noble bookstore. And in it is this huge book. Let's see, how many pages is this? 661 pages. It's called King, A Life. So while people were giving gifts to the bride and groom, he gave me this beautiful book. It's brand new by Jonathan Eig, E-I-G, I think. I think that's how you say it. Best-selling author of Ali. So he'd written a story about Muhammad Ali. So this is a biography of Martin Luther King Jr. And it is just fascinating. Last few days I've been just thumbing through it, and I've been just trying to find some time to just sit down and start absorbing it and reading it and marking it up and everything. And I can't help but think, you know, he was in charge of that, of the civil rights movement taking place in this country. But 1967, he saw the problem with a war that was taking place in Vietnam, and he said, wait, there's something wrong with this. We don't know these people. We're out there shooting these people. We're killing these people. And he devoted the last portion of his life to that peace effort against Vietnam. And, you know, I think that whatever God gives us, I've shared this with you many times, especially this last year. I celebrated my 40th anniversary of priesthood. I think whatever God gives us, we have to stay focused to the mission, which is the same mission that Jesus Christ had when he came, the night he was born. Peace on earth, goodwill towards one another. That's the bottom line. I'm going to be doing another podcast soon. I want to debunk some of these myths that you hear. You know, Harry Houdini, in the last portion of his life, people think of him as a magician and an escape artist. But the last portion of his life, he dedicated to debunking a lot of these spiritualists, people who would connect with the world to come. And I think that right now, this is something that really speaks to me. I want to debunk some of these people who are out there peddling religion. I heard a man just the other night talking about, well, we are in the last days, and get ready. By the time that I finish this message to you, it may be possible that half of you have been raptured. The church will be raptured. You'll be out of there. I'm going, what are we talking about? Is this really what Jesus wanted? He wanted us to be sitting here and so self-absorbed that I'm going to heaven and you're not going to heaven? That's my happiness? Can you imagine? That's what, after everything I've taught you, everything I've said here, he's going to look at you and say, I've shared with you about love. I've shared with you about caring, about helping the least of my brothers. And by the way, if you do this, you're going to go to heaven. And who cares about everybody else? They're not going to make it, but you're going to make it into heaven. What an absurd idea. But this is what they're peddling outside. And I've got this King book right now as an inspiration. Yes, we've got one life to live. Let's live it. Let's talk about these things. So I was talking to Chris, the gentleman who gave me this book, that I want to put together a peace conference by the end of the year. And he reminded me that when the Iraqi war had just started, him and I were out on the streets of Hollywood during a protest march. We were carrying a coffin with the symbol of the young boys. And it just reminded me of that was how many years ago? What, 20 years ago? 2003. Yeah, 20 years ago. And I was thinking to myself, just a few years ago, the young kids that died in Armenia, the 44-day war, and the tragedy that we witnessed there. And what are we doing? What are we talking about? We're talking about our country, our borders, and this is what we've got to do, as if, you know, we have no faith. As if everything needs a political solution. No, it doesn't. Everything needs a solution, and we can be part of that solution. So I want to leave you with this idea. I wanted to talk a little bit about the ethnic churches. I also wanted to talk about the stupidity of these people who get up and claim that, okay, we're an Armenian church, therefore we're in charge of Jerusalem. You're not in charge of Jerusalem. You're not in charge of Etchmiadzin. You're not in charge of anything until you get out there and you are part of it. It's just like here in America, you know, it's just like you can live in America all you want. But you have absolutely no voice until you get up and you register to vote. Right? Isn't that like the least thing? I'm not talking about going out there and giving your life, sacrificing, doing this or that. I'm talking about the least thing you have to do is go out there to register so you can vote. And yet people don't. And then they sit and they complain about America. That you can't do both. You can complain once you're part of that system. And that's the problem with all these people in the ethnic churches. They talk about the church as an ethnic body rather than the body of Christ. That's what this gentleman was saying a few minutes ago. He was saying that, I thank God I'm black. I thank God I'm Armenian. I thank God I'm Greek. Put in the descriptor all you want, but don't confuse it with the church. The church is sacred. It belongs to Christ. And we celebrate that this time in our life, this period between Ascension and Pentecost, which is coming up this Sunday, is the celebration of that church, which is beyond ethnicity and belongs to Christ. All right, let's take a break. Here's Susie to make her announcement. I'll be back in a couple moments for some parting shots.
Before getting back to the Next Step with Father Vazgen, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. The Next Step is entering homes and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. We look forward to your comments and words of encouragement. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Well, thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you all of you for joining in and connecting, and most importantly, for your prayers. I want to give you a quick rundown of what's going on. You know, we always celebrate our anniversary, and we'll be starting off our 16th year of podcasting The Next Step next month. And we'll be doing that from Armenia, believe it or not. And we're really excited about that. Meanwhile, we are on epostle.net day and night. Hard to believe, but the volume of programming is really kind of grown exponentially. But every day there's a daily message you can get at epostle.net. Sundays we have Giragi. It is Some of Sunday, and it's a way to start off your week ahead. And that takes place at 5 o'clock Pacific time. And kind of interesting for me, because when we do broadcast those, the numbers are kind of low, and then over the next 24 hours, they increase quite a bit. So it's interesting as the time zones catch up with it and everything. We've got more listeners and followers to that. So that is, again, available at epostle.net, I believe, just /Sunday. And you should be directly there. If not, just go to the homepage and find it. Everything is available there. It's the mothership right now until we can get our inner shoes back up and working. A lot of stuff going on. A lot of stuff which has been put on, I don't want to say back burners, but the health issues have also prevented us from doing more than we can. We've got a couple podcasts in the pipeline, one of them with Suzanne Bolosian, the other one coming up from up north, and that's going to be a surprise for everybody. I think when you hear it, you're going to be really, really happy with that. But probably we're not going to see these manifest themselves, at least for the next couple months, just because of things getting backed up. Our intentions are good. We want to make more available, but it does take time, and they're very taxing time-wise, but not spiritually. I gotta let you know one more time, I'm gonna tell you, Next Step to me is like my ultimate therapy, catharsis. It's just there. I love it, and I thank you very much for being the audience for The Next Step. All right, that does it for today's show. Meet me at epostle.net, and make sure you check out the show notes where we'll have like links to the things we talked about today. On behalf of my wonderful producer, Susie, and myself, Father Voskan, I look forward to taking the next step with you again next week.
Stand by for disclaimer.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with The Next Step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, The Next Step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Epostle.net. Apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanded universe.
Forgot to ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are. Bye.